following program is brought to you by Total Theater Online. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the staff or management of WGBB. You're listening to the station that serves your community, 1240 WGBB. And now it's time for Dave's Gone By with David Lefkowitz.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Dave's Gone By. 90 minutes of comedy, music, talk radio, interviews, and more coming to you live from Ground 1. Ground 0 was already taken, so we're making this Ground 1. Merrick, Long Island, the heart of the nautical mile and the smile of my nautical heart. I'm Dave. Dave Lefkowitz, radio personality, humorist, theater critic, and songwriter, and every Sunday night at 7:30 on WGBB, right after Teen America. Thank you very much, Rich, for having me on the show this week. That was really cool. Great to talk about all that stuff with you. But my show aims to be an eclectic mix of smart talk, crazy talk, verbal maneuvers, and musical horse doovers. Welcome to the 25th episode of Dave's Gone By. We're a quarter century old already, and I'd say it's been a rather eventful 25 weeks, wouldn't you? Let's see, what's happened in the world recently? Well, they released those kids in the Central Park jogger case because their DNA wasn't on the victim. No, it was pretty big. Winona Ryder had this shoplifting thing. Tommy Mottola stepped down from running Sony. Yeah, I think that about covers it. Oh, wait, of course, how can I forget? Yeah, the sniper guy is in Maryland. Well, there you have it. It's been a pretty quiet stretch in America, all things considered. Didn't like that nasty snowstorm a few weeks ago, but that's turning into a distant memory. Nope, it's just business as usual in our corner of the world, and what? Oh, Engineer Paul is gesturing frantically at me. Hi, Engineer Paul. What? He thinks I'm leaving something out. The what? Spell it. W-A... Oh, yes, they did a study showing that a lot of the bottled drinking water people buy in supermarkets with the fancy names and stuff, half the water is actually from local aquifers. You might as well turn on your tap, fill the bottle halfway, and then add a little spring water from upstate New York. It's the same thing. And if you... What? What? War? There's a war on? No, you mean there's a moron. He's in the White House, I know. What? Look on the TV. Well, no, there's infomercials, old sitcoms, and... Oh!
We interrupt this program with a special bulletin. America is now under martial law. All constitutional rights have been suspended. Attempt to contact loved ones, insurance agents, or attorney. Shut up. Do not attempt to think or depression may occur. Stay in your home. Curfew is at 7 p.m. sharp after work. Anyone caught outside the gates of their subdivision sectors after curfew will be shot. Remain calm. Do not panic. Your neighborhood watch officer will be by to collect urine samples in the morning. Anyone caught interfering with the collection of urine samples will be shot. Stay in your home. Remain calm. The number one enemy of progress is question. National security is more important than individual will. All sports broadcasts will proceed as normal. No more than two people may gather anywhere without permission. Use only the drugs prescribed by your boss or supervisor. Shut up! Be happy! Obey all orders without question. The comfort you've demanded is now mandatory. Be happy. At last, everything is done for you.
Well, gosh, I had no idea all that was going on. I hope I'm not breaking any laws, because I'm not especially happy at the moment, and I'm on the radio, so if I shut up, the next 80 minutes is going to be pretty boring. Watch, the ratings will triple. But seriously, or not seriously, this program's always bouncing between the two, we're going to do our usual thing on Dave's Gone By, a mix of music, talk radio, interviews, and comedy. A little bit of a twist this week, and not just cause of the WAR. Last Sunday, a cool guy and a good friend of the station, Michael Artsis, was feeling under the weather. He has a new Sunday night show, which he started 2 weeks ago, and the first week he had me on basically as co-host, which was great fun, and I thank him very much. Then this past Sunday, while he was ill, he asked me to take the first hour of his Midnight Madness show, which I did. And then the second hour, we played a pre-recorded interview Mike did with radio legend Cousin Brucey Morrow. So first of all, I'm grateful to Michael for the extra airtime. And I can also be a lot more spontaneous and off the cuff than I am here because of the nature of that show and this one. I also want to give Mike some payback, so later in the program, he'll be joining me on Dave's Gone By. He'll talk about the Cousin Brucey interview, how he got started in broadcasting, some of the shows he does on WGBB. I know he's got two late shows during the week around midnight, then he does one of the WGBB Tonights, I think Monday, from live from DCafe in Merrick. And, of course, Sunday, which is still apparently being worked out, the details on that. But doing Mike's show last week, I hope you got a chance to hear it, I took the 10 to 11 gig on what was pretty short notice. Engineer Paul offered me the slot just before I was going on the air with my regular show. That gave me 1 hour to strategize between the end of Dave's Gone By at 9 and the start of Midnight Madness at 10. I really should ask Michael why a show that starts at 10 o'clock is called Midnight Madness, but leaving that aside, I got all excited and flustery last week because, you know, I jumped at the chance for the extra hour. Put extra airtime in front of a radio guy, and it's like taking old Jewish people on a cruise and saying, look, I know you've eaten dinner already, but there's a fresh buffet on deck 3. Don't even stand in their way. The wheelchairs will leave skid marks on your forehead. So I just said yes without even thinking. Without even wondering, wait a second, I've just spent an hour and a half on the air doing exactly what I want to do. Pretty much everything I had planned, I did. What in God's name am I going to do for another hour? So I frantically went back and started looking over the mini-discs we have at the station. A lot of the pre-production work, sketches and songs and some of the interviews, those are often pre-recorded, and when they are, they're put not on tape anymore, but on these mini-discs. They hold like 80 minutes of audio, which can be cut up into various tracks. And they look like 3 1/4-inch computer floppies. Really convenient, very compact. The station, which is state-of-the-art, if the art is 1950s deconstruction, now we have some modern equipment here, and they're phasing out carts. Those are those old-fashioned, see-through, raised plastic thingies. They're like 8-tracks, only with just a minute or two of tape in them. The idea is that you put commercials and PSAs on carts, public service announcements on them, and they're really easy to cue. You pop a card in, hit a button, and it just jumps right to the start of the commercial. They've been used for years. But why bother with that when you can pop 70 different commercials on one mini-disc and just hit the track number like you would on a CD and there it is? Of course, mini-discs can misfire or jump a track, as they have here. We've had our share of mini-dystrophy on this show, as engineer Paul can attest, but carts can falter too, and mini-discs are a pretty good format. And so, a lot of the comedy sketches and songs I do on this program are first recorded digitally on mini-disc. So last week, I grabbed my list of what was on the discs set aside for my regular show, and I hurriedly scribbled down a kind of best-of compilation. Basically, I rely on all this cool, tried-and-tested pre-recorded stuff, maybe play a song or two, and just use the live time to announce what I was playing, maybe plug my show, Mike's interview at 11, and then do a quick exit. And I made one extra note to myself. If I was going to go off book, if I was going to extemporize, I wrote, talk about the war. That was my only note. And then the hour hand hit 10 o'clock, and Mike's theme song started playing. I sat down at the mic, not even my usual microphone, but the one nearest the computer, just in case I went blank and needed to do a Google search or check Yahoo News for impending calamity. The mic light went on, I introduced myself, and for the next 50 minutes, I didn't shut up. I rambled, I joked, I bantered with Engineer Paul. I did take phone calls. My wife and my dad were kind enough to call in, so that was 20 minutes right there. And I talked about the war, my ambivalent feelings, the disjointed sensation of being both anti-Bush administration and pro-blowing the crap out of Iraq. I don't even remember what I blabbered on about, but I did it and did it and did it until I looked at the clock and there was like 10 minutes left in the show. And I realized I hadn't played any Best of Dave bits, as I promised, so I threw on a Bin Laden sketch from a few weeks back, and then closed the show with a little klezmer music because the next day was Purim, and that was it. Suddenly it was 11 o'clock and time for Mike's chat with Cousin Brucey. So much for all that planning and not having anything to say. And I heard later in the week from various sources that I did a pretty good job. I'm not saying that to brag, I'm really not. I'm saying it was a positive learning experience. And again, it reinforced the desire to be a bit more spontaneous here on this show. Not to be afraid of drawing a blank now and then, or saying something dumb, which I do anyway, or sounding discombobulated or unprepared. So while a lot of this program will still be scripted or taped beforehand, because I like that comfort, the ability to choose my words carefully and phrase my thoughts just so, I'm also going to try and leave a bit more room to stretch out. So bear with me the next couple of weeks. If it gets unlistenable, there's always TV. They're showing Gulf War II, the sequel. This time it's personal. And because I sometimes get a little personal, or opinionated, or slightly suggestive, I better do my usual disclaimer. This program, say it with me, it's rated DGB-13, Dave's Gone By 13. That means I will probably drop 13 verbal bombs during the course of this program. If you want to protect your children, by all means. But I suggest using them as human shields, because any psychic damage I do, they won't feel until years from now when they're better able to handle it. So on tonight's show, we will talk to Mike Artsis. We will have the news gone by, of course, a segment about the stock market, and yes, a brand new song you can sing along with when Bushy goes marching in. You'll see the lyrics on the website, hometown.aol.com/Dave's Gone By. I'm not sure I can do Oscar updates. I know that starts tonight, too, a little later on. I'll try and log in and get some of the news and share that with you over the course of the evening. And I'm not sorry I'm missing the ceremony, except for the political stuff. I'm sure all the actors have been warned not to get political. And I'm sure half of them will disregard it and use their time to weigh in on the conflict. So I'd love to hear their diatribes and the audience reaction, plus how ABC handles the rougher moments. Of course, we're all being told again and again that no matter how we feel about the conflict, we have to support our soldiers. Duh! Like, the protesters are hoping America loses the war just to prove Bush wrong, and what? France right? I must say, I'm glad all the anti-war protesters are out there. I think it's exciting. I think it allows them to feel powerful, like they have a voice, even though this war was a fait accompli the minute Bush took office. I like the sense that they haven't given up hope of affecting the government, our government, even though there's absolutely no hope of changing this government. And yet, I think they've picked the wrong fight. George Bush is the bad guy, but Saddam Hussein is the worst guy. He had weapons, he hates America, he hates Israel, he funds terrorists, and most of all, he helped fund or facilitate the folks who gave us 9/11. 100,000 people can march on Times Square, God bless them, but I'll bet there's 3,000 former New Yorkers looking down on Basra going, yeah, baby, burn to ashes, unroll your prayer mats, ghulams, you're going to need them. All we want to do to you is what you did to us. We don't have an Oscar update yet because the awards haven't started, but we do have a Super Bowl score for you. It's 20-3 at the half, Tampa Bay leading the Raiders. Doubtful that Oakland will come back in the second half, but you never know. Remember that Dave's Gone By is the only place you can hear the Super Bowl score 2 months after the Super Bowl. In the Emmer Effing House, giving us the body count on Dave's Gone By. Masters of Revenge, Masters of Payback, Masters of War, Slaves of Oil. It's all one big mess, but we'll try to sort it out with the News Gone By, aimed directly at your compound right after this. Welcome back to Dave's Gone By. It's 7:53 p.m., and time for the News Gone By, a look at events of the past week from a bunker-busting backseat. Our top story? Remember Baghdad? It was this big city in Arabia with lots of palaces and office buildings and stuff. For more information on Baghdad, call Pugach Realty 1-800-555-3836. Well, war brings out the crackpot in people, no question about that. In Israel this week, a family of three was so cautious about securing their apartment with duct tape in case of a poison gas attack, they left no space for ventilation. You guessed it. They suffocated to death. I'm not saying these people were dumb, but I think they died because the instruction sheet fell off their fridge. You know, the one that read, to continue breathing, inhale and exhale, repeat as needed. And how about that magnificent lunatic in Washington, D.C.? A tobacco farmer, distraught that lower subsidies were forcing him out of business, held police at bay for 48 hours from his tractor. According to the Associated Press, streets were closed for blocks and traffic was snarled for miles. I'm going to get my message out or die trying, said Dwight Watson, age 50. I've got the rest of my life to stay right here. I'm not going anywhere. Well, not quite. After a two-day standoff, he surrendered. Police wouldn't comment on whether Watson's claim to be wired with explosives was true, although reports say that was unlikely. The incident began around noon Monday, when Watson drove his Jeep into a pond near the Washington Monument. The Jeep was pulling a trailer carrying a John Deere tractor and a motorcycle. He mounted the green tractor and drove it off the trailer into the water. The cops cordoned off a large area near the Washington Monument, the Vietnam Vet Memorial, and the Lincoln Memorial. Asked about Watson, a neighbor said, and this is a quote, "He's just your average run-of-the-mill neighbor, except when it comes to the tobacco issue. Then he's what you might call a radical. He did the same thing about 4 years ago, but it didn't turn into what it did now. He just drove his tractor around Washington and then came home." Well, during this standoff, Watson wore a military medic's helmet and a T-shirt bearing a variety of badges and patches. Good thing he didn't go to the Cross Gates Mall. They would have tossed him right out. Watson was also carrying a U.S. flag upside down to show distress. Another flag on the tractor showed a drawing of yellow tobacco leaves. Washingtonians felt uneasy about the standoff, especially considering the Code Orange terror threat. Showing a puckish sense of humor early in the crisis, Police Chief Charles Ramsey told the press, quote, "Right now, this is the only game in town. We can afford to wait. If there were multiple events going on, we'd move him." Now, politicians, Democrats and Republicans alike, were quick to condemn Watson and label him a domestic terrorist, all except for Senators Jesse Helms and Strom Thurmond, who pointed to his tobacco flag and hailed him as a freedom fighter. After the situation was resolved, one D.C. resident, a retired counterterrorism official yet, complained about the handling of it. He told the press, quote, "What this shows is one or two people can really throw a metropolitan area into chaos. I assume that the sniper, the anthrax incidents, and perhaps the tractor incident are not lost on people who might want to make further mischief in the future," unquote. A lot of locals grumbled about the traffic delays and detours, but I'm sorry, I give all credit to the cops here. I'm sure they knew pretty quick that he had no explosives. They could have taken him down an hour or two into the incident. But they realized he was just a cranky guy gone round the bend, not out to hurt anybody, just to get his message across. So they stabilized the situation, and when he was ready, he gave up quietly. It would have been real easy to put a bullet through his head and say, "Okay, we're not kidding around. If you bring terror to the nation's capital, even kooky, rather humorous terror, you're horse meat." So it took great self-control to hold fire and let the guy wear himself out. Of course, if the next guy who does this carries a Palestinian flag instead of an American one, I hope they air condition his face. But that's just me. Speaking of humans and farming machines, 23-year-old Rachel Corey of Olympia, Washington, was killed in Israel last Sunday in a half-accident, half-murder. Army crews were busy clearing borderlands around the Gaza Strip to make them safe for the Purim holiday. Corey and other members of the International Solidarity Movement Peace Group tried to block the maneuvers. After running from tear gas and gunfire, Corey climbed on a pile of earth about to be bulldozed. She allegedly looked the driver in the eye, he looked back, and then he plowed over her. At a nearby hospital, she died of skull and chest fractures. Israel's army is calling the incident a faux pas. Corey's colleagues are calling it murder, saying that the girl was wearing a bright orange jacket and was clearly visible. The worry is that Corey's radicalism will become even more dangerous now that she's gone underground. The remaining protesters are being more careful, though. Anytime they're in the vicinity, they always carry a handful of no-dos. With the long-awaited war now a reality, the FBI has ratcheted the color for domestic terror alerts from mellow yellow back up to blazing orange. They caution that Muslim extremists are likely to go after U.S. targets and even launch strikes on American soil. Meanwhile, President Bush and Colin Powell are telling Americans not to panic, to continue with their daily lives, and if possible, to relax. Relax? How can you unwind with all this going on? But they're right. You gotta just keep living your life normally and take it easy. But how? I know. Take a train to the city to see a Broadway show. Oh, that's right, the fair's going up in May, so you might not have the discretionary income to afford a Broadway show. Okay, so go to a bar and have a drink and a smoke. Oh, wait, you're not allowed to smoke in a bar anymore. So go on vacation. Fly to Mexico or the Bahamas or spend a long weekend in London. Except American Airlines, where airplanes were the source of the whole horror to begin with, and American tourists in other countries might as well walk around with big archery targets on their backs. Okay, so don't fly. Take a drive right here in the good old USA to someplace fun like New Orleans or Disney World. Except, you know, gasoline is bound to go over $2 a gallon, and if there's any kind of terror threat, spot checks at toll booths will slow traffic to 5 miles an hour. You know what? Stay home. Find happiness and satisfaction just being with your wife and kids. Except the American Psychological Association reported this week that, contrary to popular opinion, people aren't any happier or more satisfied after years of marriage than they were when they were single. Marriage can be rewarding, the study concluded, but also incredibly stressful. All right, single or married, you can always kick back and have a beer or a glass of wine. Just, you know, don't drink too much or you'll turn into an alcoholic. Maybe just a nosh, some cookies, or make yourself an ice cream sundae. Eat too much of that stuff, and the sugar will rot you out from the inside, and cholesterol will blow you to pieces. All right, so maybe food and drink is not a good idea. Maybe the best way to relax is kicking back and watching TV. Let's see. Well, not the local news. Fear Factor? No. Jerry Springer? No. World's Most Dangerous Police Chases, Crime Scene Investigation, Gangster Rap on MTV, World Wrestling Smackdown, Animal Hospital, 6 Feet Under, oh God! Wait, what is this? CNN? Wow. They're dropping a cluster bomb on Baghdad. Look at that big orange cloud with the sparks and everything. And another one right behind it, taking down that building. Woo, yeah, just like a Hollywood movie. They're saying 200 or 300 anti-American troops are being wiped out in one shot. All these dangerous enemies just erased from the planet. Gone, man. Now we own the place. I feel better now. Loose and relaxed. Yeah, I'm feeling pretty good. I'm going to get some shut-eye, and if New York is still here when I get up, tomorrow's going to be a good day.
Standing waiting for a man to show, wide-eyed, one eye fixed on the door. This waiting's killing me, it's wearing me down. Day in, day out, my feet are burning holes in the ground. Warmer than a bedroom floor. Want someone to hold me close forevermore. I'm a sleeping dog, but you can't tell when I'm on the prowl. You better run like hell. You know it makes
Gone By on Dave's Gone By, WGBB AM 1240 Freeport. In terrorism news, on Friday, two flasks of the deadly poison ricin were found in a baggage locker at the main train station in Paris. Police there fear the toxin may be linked to a future attack by Islamic radicals. French authorities contacted the U.S. military for help in dealing with the crisis, to which one American general replied, "Wait till you've actually inhaled the ricin, then do some more inspections, and then give us a call." Speaking of Grey Perry, last week we reported that two senators, angry at the French for not supporting President Bush's war on Iraq, went to their Capitol Hill cafeteria and renamed French fries and French toast Freedom Fries and Freedom Toast. Well, the French may have surrendered to Hitler, but when it comes to pointless posturing, I confess they've got us beat this time. A French website is now urging citizens to send pretzels to President George Bush. Sounds cute, but it's actually a pretty nasty joke. Back in January, the president was snacking on pretzels while watching a football game on TV. He choked on the snack. I think this is January 2002. He choked on the snack and fainted, hitting his head and cutting his face with his glasses. Anyway, the French website, bretzelforbush.com, that's bretzel with a B, is gathering money from donors to buy huge quantities of the salty nosh. They'll stockpile the pretzels and send them to the White House all at once. No word on what American webmasters will send Jacques Chirac in retaliation. One programmer suggested choosing something smelly, tasteless, and unpleasant. Others rejected the idea because France was already full of French people. So far, thank goodness, the war has caused little disturbance here at home, apart from some traffic-snarling protests and the occasional showboating crackpot. As expected, however, the airline industry has taken a beating. Northwest, United, Continental, American Airlines, and KLM have all cut staff and schedules, while Avianca and Hawaiian Airlines both filed for bankruptcy. To make up for the drop in air travel, Wisniewski Polish Bus Lines has announced that it will begin transatlantic service in April. Al Szybylski, the CEO, says that for $100 round trip, the Wisniewski bus will drive door-to-door from New York to London, Paris, or Madrid. Asked how long the trips take, Szybylski admitted he wasn't sure since all the test runs tended to stop at the coast of Maine. "We're working on it," he said, "but it's going to take a lot of sponges." Moving away from war news, Philip Morris lost a giant class-action lawsuit this week. The company will have to pay $7.1 billion in compensation plus $3 billion in punitive damages for deceiving its customers. Similar suits are pending for other tobacco makers who advertised light cigarettes as being less harmful than the regular smokes. When lawyers for Philip Morris complained about the $10 billion decision, His Honor said, "It's not $10 billion, it's $10 billion light." In historical news, scientists have discovered what appears to be the oldest human footprints. Three sets of prints were found in southern Italy, set in hardened ash, and said to be 350,000 years old. The prints were found on the side of a volcano, which apparently started to erupt at the time the humans were there. That would explain why these prints are quickly leading away from the volcano, and why, by each footprint, there are two streams, one yellow, one brown. In crime news, German police arrested an 11-year-old boy for stealing goldfish from a local pet shop and then using a homemade flamethrower to set them on fire. The boy was scolded for his actions by a Berlin judge. "Haven't you learned from German history?" the judge asked. "If you must kill goldfish, starve and torture them first, then put them in the oven. It's much more efficient." A bad accident for Paul Stoyanovich this week. The creator of TV's World's Wildest Police videos fell 3,000 feet from a cliff into the Pacific Ocean and was presumed dead. Most interesting about the mishap is that after the first fall, he climbed back up and fell again in slow motion, and then he went back up one more time and fell at normal speed. Friends and family are, of course, all asking the same question: why didn't he wait until sweeps week? A bit more entertainment news. I know the corporatization of theater is inevitable. Putting on shows costs so much, and you can't afford to run a commercial theater these days without big sponsors and consortiums. That's why we have the Ford Theater and the Cadillac Winter Garden on Broadway and the Cadillac Palace in Chicago. And you also have theaters named after generous donors, like Off-Broadway's Lucille Lortel. But I do think they're taking this too far. I got a press release this week for the 5th Annual Women of Color Arts Festival. It's a festival of films, performance art, and live theater taking place at a couple of different venues, May 1st through June 6th. And that's cool. Some of the shows will be at the Henry Street Settlements Abrams Arts Center. That's a mouthful in itself. But other shows will be at, and I am not making this up, the venue is called the Peter Norton Symphony Spaces Leonard Nimoy Thalia Theater. Talk about highly illogical. Let me try that again. The Peter Norton Symphony Spaces Leonard Nimoy Thalia Theater. You can't even say it fast as an acronym. The PNSSLNTT. And people are just going to call it the Thalia, or what they've always called it, Symphony Space. I just wonder if we're only a year or two away from the Ted Turner Little Playhouse at the Norman Lear Sony BMI Art Center Steven Spielberg Monsanto Atrium. It's not a bad thing, except for all these extra trees they'll have to cut down to make big enough tickets. Cool story from the syndicated Weird But True column, published locally in the New York Post. 24-year-old Christiane Kittel awoke from a 7-year coma after she was taken in a wheelchair to see a Bryan Adams concert. Suddenly, she started showing reactions we have been dreaming of, said her mother. 3 times she called my name. Kittel's recovery was short-lived, however. The next night, they brought her to a Yanni concert, and she went right back to sleep. Also from the Weird But True column, controversy broke out at Concordia University in Montreal over a painting by a student. The work, torn down by other students and then put back up, showed the Twin Towers protruding from President Bush's unzipped pants. The painter, Allison Moore, said she welcomed the provocation engendered by the piece. The school principal had no comment, except to say he was relieved that Moore airbrushed Tony Blair out of the painting, as he looked extremely unattractive with his mouth around the 110th floor. Speaking of talented youth, the Village Council of Chagrin Falls, Ohio, has agreed to let 16-year-old Jacob Coway play his accordion on the street. An employee at a nearby Starbucks complained because the boy was apparently soliciting money, while another passerby groused that the polka music was, quote, tacky. The council ruled, however, that Coway's accordion did not disturb the peace, and he was allowed to continue. But he was then arrested by federal agents on charges of terrorism. The boy's parents called the charges preposterous. But even they couldn't deny the horror and panic that ensued when Jacob launched into Lady of Spain and Bat's Amore. If only young Jacob could be adopted by John Allen Rubio and his common-law wife, Angela Camacho. They were arrested on Wednesday by police who found all 3 of their children dead. 2 of the kids, both under age 5, were found stuffed in trash bags next to the bed. The 3rd, a 1-year-old, was decapitated. Police are deciding what charges to level at the Rubios. They've already been cited for violations by the sanitation department. The couple should have realized that Tuesday, not Wednesday, is Child Corpse Collection Day. Also, you can't throw out a headless baby unless you put a twist tie around his neck and separate the tongue for recycling. A little news of the absurd. Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia received a free speech award from the Cleveland City Club this week. He gave a speech at the ceremony, but, I'm not making this up, he banned the broadcast media from covering it. Terry Murphy, vice president of C-SPAN, said Scalia's embargo on radio and TV, quote, begs disbelief and seems to be in conflict with the award itself. Meanwhile, the American military is fighting a war for peace, helping the people of Iraq by blowing up Baghdad, supporting Israel's security by backing Palestinian statehood. Just one question. What potion do we all have to drink to get back to the other side of Wonderland?
We'll be right back.
closing the news gone by with some local news, a pathetic story about a 45-year-old animal lover who let her life get out of control. Luann Abel of Staten Island lived alone for many years with dozens of cats. She loved them so much, she started sleeping in her car and giving her whole house over to the felines. When Abel was found by EMS officers last week, they discovered more than 50 dead cats in her home in what the Daily News described as a stomach-churning scene of dead cats, trash, and feces. The good news is that just by adding a parking lot and marquee, the house is already a fully functioning Korean restaurant. And that's the news gone by for March 23rd, 2003, Life During Wartime. Please send your comments, opinions, and rotisserie goldfish to Dave's Gone By, P.O. Box 62, Hewlett, New York, 11557-0062, or email us at davesgoneby@aol.com. We reserve the right to read your letter on the air, name withheld upon request. That's Dave's Gone By, no apostrophe, at AOL.com, or snail mail, Box 62, Hewlett, New York, 11557-0062. Please, no ricin, I'm allergic. If you're a good American, that means you like to own things. Well, now's your chance. You can own a piece of my show. That's right, Dave's Gone By is ready to promote you. If you have a product, event, or service to hawk shamelessly, you can buy 30 or 60 seconds of advertising time on my show. You can even be a sponsor. Just imagine. This week's News Gone By is brought to you by you. We'll be right back after this word from your product. Advertising on Dave's Gone By is cost-effective and reaches listeners not only on Long Island, but thanks to WGBB.com all over the world. To get a piece of the Dave, call 516-295-1511 or email davesgoneby@aol.com. To see our disgustingly low ad rates, check our website, hometown.aol.com/Dave's Gone By. Remember, you could be talking to you right now. Are you listening? A23 PM, welcome back to Dave's Gone By. I learned something interesting about the stock market this week. Not how to make a lot of money in it, that would be really nice. No, I learned a little bit about the sick psychology of Wall Street. Maybe I'm naive. Maybe I was a tyro all these years and wasn't hip to what everybody else knew about. But this week really drove it home, and that's what I want to discuss in my Dave's Goes Off segment tonight. Dave Goes Off is where I get to rant on a particular topic, say my piece, speak my opinion, maybe toss in a couple of jokes along the way, and hopefully invite you to give some response later on, either by letters or emails. Now, I haven't played the stock market for a few years, and considering the way the market's been doing since Bush took office, it's probably not such a bad thing. Granted, it's no fun having bank CDs come due, CDs that were earning 6 and 7% when I opened them, and now I'm lucky to get 3% if I tuck them away for 5 years. And with all these bank fees and overdraft charges and the cost of buying checks, you can actually put money in a bank, not withdraw a dime, and come out with less than you started with. That was always the drawback of Wall Street in Las Vegas, but now it's happening with savings banks. You can take $1,000 to Wall Street and lose it all. But if you get lucky, you maybe make $5,000. You can take $1,000 to Vegas and blow it. But if you're on a roll, you can parlay that to 10 grand. You put $1,000 in the bank, and if you overdraft, you get docked 50, maybe $100 in bounce checks and late fees. Ah, but if you win, you make $20. Wowee. But this is not a rant about banking. This is about what people are driven to when banking becomes no better than putting your money under your mattress. The stock market. And I confess, I've become something of a numbers junkie. I'm home a lot of times during the day, putting the radio show together, updating a couple of different websites, and every hour or so I'll check Yahoo for the latest news. It's a habit, a quick way of seeing if anything big's going on or if any stories are potential candidates to include in the news gone by. But even more often than that, I'll click on the stocks button just to see where the market is at. And being something of a giddy pessimist, with more than a touch of schadenfreude for the rich and powerful, I always hope to see the Dow Jones taking a dive. Not that it doesn't affect me. I've got 401ks and all that so-called secure old age money. But I do get a visceral kick when I think of multimillionaires getting the multi wiped out of them. I also want to see the Bush administration vilified and put out to pasture. And the only way that can happen is the economy, stupid. The Republicans defeated Al Gore by tainting Bill Clinton with his own sleaze. Meanwhile, even with the dot-com crash, the market was at 11,000. By contrast, even after a strong comeback the last 2 weeks, the Dow is still down for the count about 8,500. But I want to talk about that comeback. For weeks, pundits have said that the market was faltering for two reasons: lousy unemployment figures and worries about the war. So, after the whole round of corporate scandals and bankruptcies quieted down, and industries came out of their post-9/11 slump, the Dow was slow to respond. The numbers on the Dow and NASDAQ kept sinking, even though a lot of the economic indicators were pointing towards a positive turnaround. But then it dawned on me that the commentators and the columnists and the speculators all got it wrong. The market likes unemployment and loves war. Sounds weird, doesn't it? When livelihoods and lives are both at risk, the stock market goes, yippee? But think about it. When a big company is in trouble, Chapter 11 time, and they bring in consultants to restructure and downsize, what does that really mean? It means they're firing a lot of people. And they're doing it for one of two reasons: to save money at the bottom line, because fewer employees means less money paid out in salaries and lower costs for benefits, insurance, and incidentals. The other reason is to make the company more attractive for an even bigger company to take over. Either way, the result is a hunk of humanity getting pink slips and the stock price jumping 5 or 10 points. Look at us. We're a lean, mean corporate machine. We can make 1 million superconductors with just 3 employees, one to pour the steel, one to watch the assembly line, and one to man the phones. And we also have an illegal alien come in twice a week and dust for quality control. So, if the government releases rising unemployment figures, bad news, right? No. The stock market goes up with greed instead of down with sympathy. Now, as for the war, week after week, the analysts were saying the market couldn't concentrate on anything because of the impending conflict. Any good news was offset by the worry that a week later, our boys would be marching into Baghdad with all the uncertainty that entailed at home and abroad. The airline industry is on tenterhooks. All America went back to code orange. How can investors be confident with all that going on, right? Wrong. And I learned this from the market turnaround this past week. The Dow was tanking 2 weeks ago, hundreds of points lower and flirting with the worst averages in years, well before 9/11. And then suddenly, boom, like a parrot with 4,000 volts through it, suddenly the numbers shot up. Well, what happened? Did peace break out throughout the land? Did Saddam Hussein surrender and vow to trade oil for SpongeBob SquarePants memorabilia? No. Just the opposite, actually. George Bush gave Saddam Hussein a war ultimatum, and the dictator threatened to use chemical weapons he told the inspectors he didn't have on American troops. What changed was not the threat of war, but the uncertainty of it. As soon as investors realized conflict was inevitable, they started snapping up tech stocks, companies making all the gadgets and computer equipment used by the Army, Navy, and Air Force. NASDAQ went through the ceiling. The Dow rose 500 points in 2 days, 1,000 points in less than 2 weeks. I had always been told war was good for the economy, but I never understood what that meant. Now I see it. Promise the investors that the companies they have their money in will have these huge orders from the government, and they go into a buying frenzy. Why wouldn't they? If I owned the company that made toilet seats, and suddenly Uncle Sam put an order in for 10,000, and you know the military, they pay $200 for a piece of these babies, well, I'm going to have a very good second quarter, that's for sure. And it's definitely happening, because I was talking to Engineer Paul last week, and he had ordered some rather obscure radio connector parts from some outfit on the island. And first they told him, oh yeah, we'll have them in by Tuesday. Just give us a call that morning to make sure they're in from the warehouse. Well, not only did they not have these wickets in, they said they're not shipping anything to consumers for a month because all their inventory is going right to the Gulf. They're shipping equipment out as fast as they can slam it together. Heck, if Long Island still had that Grumman plant, we wouldn't be in debt right now. A busy company is a healthy company, and a healthy company is catnip to investors. I don't even know if this particular connector company is publicly owned or whatever. I'm saying it as a general principle. All the aerodynamics and technology and weapons plants are going through the roof and taking the Dow Jones with them. So there you have it. My admittedly subjective, unscientific, and possibly completely erroneous analysis of the stock market. It relies on production at the expense of any human cost. If Saddam drops a chemical weapon on Tel Aviv and it works, DuPont and Procter & Gamble do a high five because they probably made the damn stuff in the 1980s. If two English Army helicopters crash into each other in a sandstorm, hey, that's more work for Boeing and GM. And if terrorists blow up Deutsche Bank, well, so much for the value of the euro. So whether the stock market rises or falls, whether the rich get a little poorer or the masters of war get a fresh bucket of chum, it's all just another reason the rest of us toggle on with hate in our hearts and lint in our pockets, trying to come up with the extra money for subway tokens, gasoline, and medicine. In case you haven't noticed, that bell they ring at the start and finish of every stock market session? That's not Donald Trump getting his wings. That's a death knell.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this guided tour of your New York Stock Exchange. The shares we trade here are owned by millions and millions of ordinary Americans, just like you and Howard Hughes and J. Paul Getty. The market is a ticker, a slender piece of tape, which notifies the public of its economic shape, which, if it weren't legal, would be statutory rape that's perpetrated daily from 10 to 3:30. A simple little business, it's ABC. A is for analyst. These are highly skilled professionals who spend their entire lives studying the market. Sir, do you think the market is going up or down?
We have every confidence that if there is no decline, the market will go higher.
From here to Saudi Arabia, if Johnson blows his nose, her running hops the baby, that's how the money goes, oh yeah!
The market has a logic whose wonders never cease. It's basically predictable and free of all caprice. It hits the floor in time of war and lower when there's peace. And all the smart investors rely on LSD. A simple little business, it's ABC. B is for broker.
You're thinking of buying U.S. Steel. Great idea. You're thinking of selling U.S. Steel. Great idea.
He thinks it's a great idea whether you buy or whether you sell. How come? C is for commission.
3%, 2%, 6%.
Hey, deal below the table. Can't steal beneath your nose. Watch your bloomers, Maple. That's how the money goes. Oh, yeah.
The market is a hot tip your neighbor will supply, in which you keep investing till its price has hit the sky. So when you go to sell it, there is no one left to buy. It's plunge ahead with Edsel and sell AT&T. A simple little business, it's ABC. D is for Dow Jones. Now we've all heard of the Dow Jones averages. You know when the Dow Jones is up, it's good. When it's down, it's not so good.
Hi there, investors. This is the friendly voice of Dow Jones reporting on the state of the bustling American economy. At 12 noon, the Dow Jones averages are down 7.43. Next report on the state of the bustling American economy will be at 1 p.m.
They're down on steel and carbon and high on UFOs. Up your IT barbin, that's how the money goes. And money makes the world go round, that we all agree. Which brings us back.
Welcome back to Dave's Gone By, and Dave's got guests, actually a guest, and it's almost like he is more than one guest because he seems to do so many things and have so many different shows on this very radio station. His name is Michael A. Artsis, and cool dude, young dude, getting into radio in kind of a big way. I'm going to welcome him to my show.
Hey, man, thanks for having me.
very, very happy to have you. Thank you for having me on a recent show that
Yeah. No, it was a lot of fun. I'm glad you stuck around. You were here. I invited you on, and it was a lot of fun. You know, I didn't know you before that, but I'm glad that you stayed.
And you know me biblically now, which is kind of cool.
Yes, it's nice.
So, what are you, 23, 24, something like
23,
that?
23. March 17th, I was 23.
Right. Cool. Happy post St. Patrick's Day and birthday all together. That's right. And what made you get into radio and media?
You know, it's funny. I was in high school. I guess I always knew I wanted to be an entertainer. I was always like a ham and the family jokester.
Ham radio. Get it? Ha!
And the family jokester. And it's interesting because I always thought I wanted to play professional sports. And I guess when you're in high school and you're a sophomore, junior, senior, you kind of realize that you might not be good enough to be a professional athlete. And they ask you what you want to do, and, you know, I commuted to high school. I drove from the city to Great Neck every day to go to high school.
I actually did that in elementary school, too, which was really amazing. Yeah.
That's good.
Thank you.
You took a go-kart, though, right?
So, no, I was just bullied across from my house to the next. Just, you know, constant wedging power, yeah. But
so
anyway.
They had asked me what I wanted to do, and I knew I wanted to do something in entertainment, and I thought possibly I thought possibly like Saturday Night Live or something. And, you know, I'm not sure I'm the best actor, and I definitely can't sing, and I never really got into theater. So I was in my car one day, you know, on the way to school, listening to Howard Stern.
Ah, yes.
And he had some naked chick on.
Or at least he told you she was naked.
Right.
Yeah.
And I said, wow, this is what I want to do. And then, you know, people get a bad impression of that, but really, I wasn't realizing, wow, I want to talk to naked chicks. I realized that Howard gets paid to talk. And I said, this is what I want to do. I've been doing this all my life. I haven't shut up. And my mother used to ask me, do you talk just to hear your own voice? And the answer I came to later in life was yes. I do talk just to hear my own voice. And it's amazing. I love it. So I came home one night and I told my folks. I said, I want to be on the radio. And they said, that's very nice.
They were semi-supportive, but
no,
skeptical.
No, they said, call us when you figure out what you really want to do. And my dad wanted me to become a lawyer. And he said, great, go to law school, become an entertainment lawyer, and then you can be somebody's agent. I said, I don't want to be somebody's agent. I want to be the person that needs an agent.
Yeah.
And he said, Michael, you're not funny. You're not good enough, whatever.
We should call your dad. What kind of dad is this?
Yeah, he's good dad. Real good dad. Yeah. Financially, he's good.
Oh, okay.
And
can I kill you and get in his will? I mean,
sure. All right. Go for it. And so, you know, he was against it, and he was dating this woman who was against it. And my mother was probably very supportive of it. And I came home one day, and I said, I want to go to the Connecticut School of Broadcasting. When I finish high school, let me go there. And he didn't want me to go. He let me go find out about it and told me, you know, he figured I'd never make it because you have to audition for it. And he figured I'd never make it. And so he let me go, like, fart around and do that. And when I got in, he made me a deal. And the deal was that I went to college and went to the Connecticut School of Broadcasting simultaneously. So I did that. And I graduated from the Connecticut School of Broadcasting. I hated the college I was at, transferred to the New York Institute of Technology.
Hey, all right.
And actually wound up doing, I thought I was going to be in radio immediately, wound up being in television immediately.
In what context?
I worked my way on air at LI News Tonight doing television reporting. I pushed my way. I was very persistent. I said, I'm good enough. I can do it. And I've been to the Connecticut School of Broadcasting. And
did that make a difference? Did they
you
go?
You know what?
I think it did.
It did. It definitely did, because they were willing to take a chance on me when they wouldn't have been willing earlier. You know, I mean, you know, maybe if I had stuck around for a while and did some menial work, they would have been willing to give me a chance after 2-3 years, but I got on the air, you know, rather quickly, and I think it would have been different had I not had that behind me. And I then actually became a junior correspondent for NBC at the 2000 conventions, Democratic and Republican, worked very closely with Paul Begala, Oliver North, Chris Matthews, a lot of the big names, Brokaw, Russert, Brian Williams, got to really learn business from some really great guys, got to book guests and write scripts and do some really fun stuff. And then I was doing LI News Tonight.
Where? I'm sorry, but I've not heard of that. Is that on?
Channel 31. And which is Telecare, it's a religious station.
Okay, 31 on your local cable
vision.
Right,
they do the newscast nightly. mm-hmm. for that. And I got into sports and entertainment, which is what I really excel at. I started out doing general assignment. And so when I came back from NBC, I started doing more sports and entertainment. My creative juices were flowing a little and stuff. And I really excelled at that. And I was there for about 2 more years before somebody came up to me who was a fellow reporter. And she said to me, listen, I'm giving up this shift at a radio station. How would you like to do it? And I begged and pleaded with her to let me do it. And I said, look, I could hit the post. And I joked around with her. I said, I know how to
hit
the post.
Explain. Hit the post Hitting. To our listeners.
Now, I didn't realize she was talking about talk radio. I thought she was just talking about, like, a music format. So hitting the post is when you talk right up until the lyrics start for a song. So the DJ would go, you know, hey, this is WGBB 1240 AM, and you're listening to Michael Artis. It's 12 o'clock, and it's 3, you know, it's 30 degrees out. And I just wanted to say I can't wait for the Dixie Chicks to come to the Nassau Coliseum because those are some hot girls.
Baby that got was, back! Baby got
and
back!
And see, yeah, I missed the post, but... you'd say, like, that was Phil Collins, and we're going to be listening to Billy Joel now, and then, you know, WGBB, 1240 AM. So that's about what DJs get, about 15 seconds between songs to talk.
These days, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, I never really wanted to do it, but I figured I'd jump at the chance because I could get into radio, and found out it was talk, and came down here, and, you know, the rest is history, and I still do television reporting, too. So
for LA News.
Yeah.
Great.
And I do, you know, I try and get some stuff out there for other stations as well, some sound bites and stuff, you know, that I have. And sound bites are little snippets of interviews.
Right.
So,
before I forget, first of all, when can people hear your stuff on WGBB?
Well, I'm on Sundays with the Big Mouth Brunch Sunday mornings from 11 to 11:30.
And what is that show?
That is just a Big Mouth Brunch. It's brunch, a good way to wake up on a Sunday morning. We have all my shows are sports, entertainment, and politics, so I get a lot of good guests. A lot of big names. Victoria Silverstead's going to be on in the coming weeks. The girl, I forget her name right now, the girl who was the naked girlfriend in Seinfeld, the girl who didn't like to get dressed.
Hmm, okay.
If the listeners remember that episode.
Engineer Joe is nodding his head. Yeah,
he remembers that. She's going to be on,
well,
she's gonna be on next week, actually.
Cool. And are these on the phone, or do they come into the studio? Well,
usually phone, sometimes in the studio. Lisa Lampanelli was in the studio. She was a blast. She's a big-time comedian. She's about to nail a sitcom, by the way.
Oh, okay, cool.
So everybody will know her name in a little while. But, no, she did the Chevy Chase roast on Comedy Central, and she's the queen of mean. She is just phenomenal.
Okay.
So, and I, you know, I get a lot of good guests. Aaron Garcia from the New York Dragons was on a little while ago.
No, that's indoor football, or what is that?
That's indoor football, cool. Arena football. I've had some Islanders on, and also Cousin Brucey.
Yeah, you said you had a Cousin Brucey story because you interviewed him a while ago.
I interviewed him and it ran on the station. I met him at a thing for television. I interviewed him, you know, television interviews really are for the most part 5 minutes and you're done. I said, Brucey, I'd love to have you on my radio show. He said, great. I called him up. He said, you know, I have to wait till the new year. But he had given me his home phone number. I couldn't believe that.
Wow.
And I was shocked. So I said, okay, yeah, no problem. And I figured he was like kind of just blowing me off. So he says, great, let's do it, you know, when I called him after the new year. And, you know, I thought it was going to be like a 5-10 minute interview, you know, because he's a busy guy and he explained to me all the stuff he was doing. He works very closely with these children's charities. It turned out to be like a 47-48 minute interview. We ran it twice on GBB as, you know, an hour thing. I tagged the front and the back with a nice little intro and outro. And he was just great. He was such a gentleman. He was such a doll, and he really is sincere. He's such a sincere person. Now, he told me when I interviewed him, he told me a lot of great Beatles stories, but he told me when I interviewed him, he told me that he works for the Variety Children's Charity, helps these kids, and he actually invited me on his telethon March 23rd.
Hey!
Yeah, on PAX TV. He invited
me. Did you have to act crippled or something? Or?
No, he invited me to sit on the telethon and help out and answer phones and stuff and be on the telethon. He invited me to do that, and he did that off the air after I had stopped recording, so it wasn't like a bit or anything.
Right, yeah.
And I'm doing that. You know, I know we're taping this before the 23rd of March,
right.
But, you know, so I'm excited for that. So he does all this stuff for these kids, and he told me, what he said to me was, we talked off air for a while about video production, and he said to me, you know, I'm really into video production. I said, why are you so into video production? He doesn't want a dollar that's given to these kids going somewhere else. So instead of hiring a production crew to shoot all these events that the kids do and stuff, with the, I'm sure, the exception of the telethon, because you need a professional camera crew to do that, he shoots it all himself. Well, I thought, like, ha-ha, pretty funny, you know, one day he goes out for one day and shoots a couple different things, and that's it, you know?
Right.
And he told me how he has this editing system, and, you know, and we were kind of, you know, talking back and forth because I have similar equipment to him, and we were, you know, it was fun. So I went to the circus thing today to do a little report on the circus that's in town,
right.
And I see somebody from the Variety Children's Charity happen to come up to the PR person I was dealing with. She said, I'm from the, you know, Variety Children's Charity, and I said, oh, you know, hey, I'm doing your telethon with Brucey. Oh, yeah, that's great. So I walk down these stairs, and there's Brucey with the camcorder.
Wow.
And I walk up to him, and I'm like, hey, Brucey. He's like, hey, how you doing? And I said, good. I can't wait to be on your telethon. And it was just amazing, and I kind of just watched him with these kids. It's unbelievable. He is so gentle with these kids. He's so good with the kids. And he's running around. Here's a 65-year-old man running around with a camcorder getting footage so that every dollar goes to the kids and not to a video production company that's going to now splice this together.
But he doesn't take the kids in like a back room and get their clothes off and make real money with these videos.
Come on,
no, I'm just kidding.
That's not right.
Brucey wouldn't do that.
Brucey is
the man. I've heard really good things. I've met him.
He's not Michael Jackson. He's Cousin Brucey.
He's Cousin Brucey.
He's really a great guy. You know, I kid around and I joke around a lot. That's one guy I would not mess with because
Ooh.
He is... No, I mean,
I know. All right.
He's a good guy. He's really... He's a genuine guy. And you know what? You can tell... There's no... Look, he's... People don't even know who he is when he's walking around the Coliseum doing this circus. No, people didn't recognize him.
Really? Okay.
Okay, I'm telling you honestly. He's just wearing blue jeans and a sweater. And he's... You know, the kids... It doesn't matter if they know who Brucey is or not. He's there to just be such a sport and really support them and take care of them and help them out and give back. And that's what's important.
So he's among, like, I wouldn't say an idol of yours, but he's certainly someone that
you look up to and emulate.
Are there any other, you know, Stern?
He never was an idol of mine growing up. I didn't know much about Brucey. And I found out, you know, a little bit when I got older. And then, you know, it was like, cool, Brucey, you know? And, you know... When I went to interview him, it was like, great, you know, a radio legend, and he's become an idol of mine and somebody to look up to since I've started to know him because he is such a great person and he's so giving and he gives back to the community and he hasn't forgotten where he's come from. He's done such cool things. He introduced the Beatles at Shea Stadium.
Tell me a Brucey Beatles story.
He told me a lot of funny stories about the Beatles. One of them was that you know, the Beatles were here and they didn't know what to expect when they got here. First of all, Brucey told me an interesting story that his PD, his program director, and him were introduced to the Beatles 6 months before bringing them here. And they went to the Beatles, you know, they were given the record, I guess, at the time, and said, you know, listen to this. And they said, you know what, we'll pass on these guys.
Okay.
6 months later, the Beatles were a success here. And so it's funny that the Beatles, you know, they were shut down. So it tells a good story there, is that if you think you're good enough, if you believe in yourself, keep pushing, because somebody might not think you're good enough now, but when somebody else thinks you're good enough, they'll think you're good enough too. And, you know, this other story he told me was, it was just utter chaos when the Beatles were around. People just would do anything. And they had this one night where Ringo wound up, I guess, making out with a girl on the radio. He lost his medallion that he wore around his neck. And the reason he lost it is because she had grabbed it, and Brucey had this fun thing going on, and it was just this crazy story, but it just explained the Beatles so much. And then, you know, he's making out with her on air, and that's, for them, that was groundbreaking radio.
Yeah, of course.
On top of the fact that these are the Beatles, and it was just, he told me such great stories. He did the voiceovers for the Yellow Submarine. He was very involved.
His voice was in the movie?
Yes.
This I did not know. Do you remember who he played?
No, you know what? I don't know. We didn't get that much into it, but I know that he did a lot of Beatles voiceovers, and he was buddies with these guys. He was really good friends. He hung out with them. He introduced them at Shea Stadium. He told me great stories about Walter Cronkite. His daughter...
Cronkite's daughter?
Yeah, sat in the first row at the Beatles concert at Shea Stadium. Now, the reason she sat in the first row was because... Ed Sullivan wanted to know who these Beatles were when he first got them. He wanted a little background. So he calls up Cronkite, and he goes, who are these Beatles? I got these Beatles. And Cronkite turned to his daughter and asked her. And she told, his daughter had traveled, you know, I guess to Europe or whatever, knew who the Beatles were, told Cronkite all about them. Cronkite told, you know, Sullivan all about them. So the deal was when the Beatles played at Shea Stadium, Cronkite's daughter got a first row seat.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
How crazy is that, though? I mean, it's just amazing that, you know, so the stories, he's become my idol because here his head could be so inflated and he could be this guy, and he hasn't become my idol, somebody I look up to and respect. Here's this guy whose head could be so inflated, You know, he was the biggest thing around
Roger here. Roger Grimsby's kid was first in line at the Dave Clark Five.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting. I didn't know that.
That's what drove him to drink. But I want to just remind people when your show
The Big Mouth Brunch, 11 to 11:30 Sundays. That's a great show. Cool. All my shows are really great. They all kind of tie into each other. Midnight Madness is on Wednesday and Thursday mornings from midnight to 1 a.m.
And that's also still politics, talk, entertainment.
Entertainment, yeah. And then also Monday nights, we have a blast Monday nights. It's WGBB Live. It's Monday Night Live. We're down at the D Cafe, 151 Merrick Avenue in Merrick. You come down and join us. I start broadcasting at 6 with WGBB tonight. And, you know, we've got the psychic and the psychologist after that. And the
if you're there, it's the psychic, the psychologist, and the psychotics.
Right, exactly. And and then as well, we also have Infomating, where you date by information and you don't need to be single to come down and mingle. And it's really...
I'm sure a lot of wives and husbands are thrilled about that.
Well, it's because it's not only about dating, it's also about networking. So you can find business contacts there. It's really a lot of fun. I've met some very interesting people and a couple of girls. And it's definitely worth it. It's a blast. And I stay on for all the shows, and you can come down and join us and hang out. It's a lot of fun. Any Monday night, the D-Cafe starts at 6 and doesn't end until 10, and we hang out afterwards.
Well, hang out at D-Cafe with Mike and the GBB gang. Listen for Mike on the radio. Listen to my show on the radio, Dave's Gone By. I want to thank Mike for joining me today and wish him the best of luck in all his TV, entertainment, political, sports, and other endeavors. Thanks so much.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
You betcha. Beep. Thank you, Michael Artsis. And do listen tonight, folks. Mike will be on from 10 until midnight, and I have a feeling I'm going to be with him for at least part of that time. So I think he's invited me back, and that's really kind. And, of course, I'll take him up on his offer. But right now it's time for our sing-along. I hope you're at the website, hometown.aol.com/Dave's Gone By. Get your throats ready and sing along with me in this Civil War folk ditty. When Bushy goes marching in again, Iraq, Iraq, his useless dad can grin again, Iraq, Iraq. The job he botched in 91 will get cleaned up by his evil son. The fun begins as Bushy goes marching in. It's time to make the Muslims see, Iraq, Iraq, that they should live like you and me, Iraq, Iraq, that it is right and it is good to smoke and drink and eat fast food and to watch TV when Bushy goes marching in. Who flew the planes on 9-1-1, Iraq, Iraq, and when the dirty deed was done, Iraq, Iraq, we blamed it on Osama bin Laden, but soon his name was nearly forgotten. Don't look for sense when Bushy goes marching in. The French, the Russians, and Chinese, Iraq, Iraq, make hypocritical calls for peace, Iraq, Iraq, but Bush and Cheney, they don't care, so what if they sacrifice Tony Blair? You can smell the sleaze everywhere when Bushy goes marching in. And if a few Americans die, Iraq, Iraq, if poison gas makes children cry, Iraq, Iraq, that's just the price we pay, you know, for Halliburton's portfolio. It'll go sky high, so Bushy goes marching in. The more things change, the more they don't, Iraq, Iraq. With Bush in charge, they surely won't, Iraq, Iraq. 'Cause moguls do whatever they wanna when there's a Pax Americana. It's all death and dishonor when Bushy goes marching in. 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 Welcome back to Dave's Gone By, and already it's almost 9 o'clock. My, how the time bombs have flown. So much music I wanted to play, so many things I wanted to say. Guess you'll just have to tune in next week to hear the rest of them. If you want to hear the music I played on this show, you'll have to buy the albums, but you can see the titles and artists listed on our website, hometown.aol.com/Dave's Gone By. Write that down, hometown.aol.com/Dave's Gone By, or just Google search on Dave's Gone By. All the info is there for advertising, sponsorship, how to buy cassettes of previous Dave's Gone By shows, and how to join the Bystanders Club. It's still just $10 for all the cool stuff. Visit the site or email me at davesgoneby@aol.com or snail, excuse me, snail mail Dave's Gone By, Box 62, Ulit, New York, 11557-0062. Even if you're not ready to join the fan club, please email me, tell me your thoughts, your suggestions, your war stories. And even when you're not listening to me, keep it on GBB for Long Island's Dating, Fridays at 6, Entertainment Long Island, Saturdays at 5:30, Joe Salzone Live, Saturday nights at 7:30, Teen America for at least one more week, right before me at 6:30, and Mike Artsis, Sundays at 10. Thanks, Mike, for being on my show tonight, and thank you also for letting me on your show in an hour from now. If you liked what you heard, folks, Mike's Midnight Madness is just an hour away, and I'll be there with it. Some other thank yous this week. As always, station manager Joey and engineer Paul, my wife Joyce for her critiques, contributions, and creativity, and for 5 wonderful years of marriage. March 29th is our anniversary. Honey, I'll be loving you always. Next week, our 26th show, half a year on the air. Who would have thunk it? I can't guarantee, but we'll probably still be talking about the war, just a hunch, but there'll be other stuff, I promise. Possibly theater reviews, songs to play, maybe a sketch, maybe another interview. Whatever it turns out to be, you'll hear it Sunday nights on Dave's Gone By, 7:30 to 9 p.m. on WGBB AM 1240 and live streaming on the internet at WGBB.com. So if your reception is weak or you can't pick up the show where you are, try it on the net. It really works. So until next week, don't miss your days going by. This is Dave Lefkowitz. Good night. So long, Sodom. And gone by.